Guardian Unlimited.
Hello, I'm Matt Wells, and this is Media Talk. Coming up on this special edition of the show, we look back on the media year that was 2007 as our crack team of correspondents bring you their take on the winners and losers and the movers and shakers in the broadcast, print, new media and advertising sectors. We'll be asking, what do TV bosses have to do to regain public trust after their year of fraud and fakery? Was the Madeleine McCann story the most controlled news event since the Second World War? Has Facebook jumped the shark? And whose idea was it exactly to let Alan Hansen or Anne Widdecombe anywhere near an advertising campaign? This is Media Talk from Guardian Unlimited. Well done if you've survived the Christmas period so far, and welcome to your light relief that is the Media Talk review of 2007. Now, as a treat, we've built in a special game to this week's show. See if you can spot what's live, in the podcasting sense that is, and what's been seamlessly integrated from a previous recording session by producer Ben. But remember, don't phone in, it's just for fun. On the panel this week, Steve Hewlett, former director at ITV and a columnist for Media Guardian. Are you looking forward to the new year, Steve?
Well, I can be, but to be honest, at the moment, I'm ruminating on my Christmas pudding.
John Plunkett is Media Guardian's radio correspondent. Overdone it, John, on the Christmas pudding brandy butter?
A little bit, but I've had my Alka-Seltzer, if they're not too 1980s.
No, certainly not. Jolly good. We'll hear more from both Steve and John throughout the show, but let's get started on our look back at the last 12 months. And first to broadcasting, where phony phone-ins, misleading editing, nefarious noddies. It's been a year when trust, or the lack of it, has dominated the agenda. The fakery scandal brought about several high-profile casualties, and if that wasn't bad enough, a writer's strike in Hollywood ground some of our favourite American imports to a halt. In short, then, it's been the year when television lost its sheen. Let's remind ourselves of a year to forget.
You have every right to be angry, as I am angry, that these and the earlier serious lapses have cast a shadow over the wider integrity of the BBC and the people who work for it.
You could basically characterise it by being about sort of scandals and resignations, really. We've had trust issues ranging from the name of the Blue Peter kitten.
Now, you may have already heard of Cookie in the news. Cookie is the name that actually should have been given to Sox when he arrived last year. At the time, we asked you to vote online for the name that you wanted, and Cookie came out on top. But he was called Socks, the name that came second. That was wrong, and so today we'd like to say that we're sorry.
To more serious things like sort of viewers being ripped off.
Like this week, the Jiggy Bank is in Birmingham. Yes!
We'd like to say sorry to you, because when this mistake happened, we let you down.
Premium rate phone quizzes, which sort of culminated with Channel 4 being fined £1.5 million by Ofcom.
First, we're going to play You Say We Pay, as we always do, so let's go straight to...
It's been a wake-up call this year, obviously. We've never really had a year like it with so many scandals in such a short amount of time. And, you know, obviously claimed the scalp of BBC One controller Peter Fincham, so, you know, it went pretty much to the top, although it didn't go right to the top. Obviously, Jaina Bennett and Mark Thompson are still there, but it's a very serious issue for all the broadcasters.
With unparalleled access, it's the royal family as you've never seen them before, up close and intimate.
The kind of programmes have been a bit overshadowed by all these scandals, really, but there have been some great programmes still. Obviously, Cranford got some good ratings and good critical acclaim. You know, series like Doctor Who, Spooks are still sort of doing well. Obviously, big American imports like Heroes did really well. So it's been a pretty good year for programmes, but at the end of the year when we're reviewing these things, programmes aren't at the top.
So it's interesting, Steve, what Lee Homewood was saying there, that the programmes have been overshadowed by the scandals.
Oh, no question about it. Actually, programming-wise, interestingly, you know, ITV has had it, we discussed this the other week, but ITV's had its best year since 2001 with a 2.1% decline, which is, you know...
just the 2.1%.
Trebles all round. Yes. No, but, you know, their ratings have stabilised, their share of commercial impact has gone up, their revenues are slightly up in the ITV, you know, so fantastic. Nevertheless, we're left with the abiding impression of Michael Grade, I think, sort of, you know, finding Jeremy Paxman hard and John Humphreys harder when it came to trust and TV. Over at the BBC, similarly, actually, or creatively, BBC One particularly is looking, it's looked pretty strong. BBC Two's looked pretty good. You know, one could even be reasonably generous about Three and Four. I mean, creatively, the output looks rather good. But they, you know, corporately, they really do look like they've lost the plot. And I mean, you know, our man talks about resignations. Well, truthfully, you can only really say, I don't mean to say not enough, but not really very many.
Do you think that the broadcasters, even despite all the criticism that's been hurled at them from various quarters, really have a sense of what they need to do to regain that trust in 2008?
Well, no, I don't. I have some sympathy because it's very hard to see precisely sort of what you can do. I think of it as sort of almost like in relationship terms. You know, once someone has betrayed you, you either dump them and start again, and you know, so at least you know there's a learning process all round. But at least you know, or you know, your sense that you may have been betrayed again kind of only diminishes, you know, with time. And it's one of those things, I think, which in the absence of kind of very high-level resignations or new regime or new broom sweeps clean, and Michael Gray could have been that at ITV, but the way things have panned out doesn't sort of really feel like that now. In the absence of that, all you can do is kind of time. And, you know, they better keep their fingers crossed that nothing like this happens again. Now, the difficulty there, of course, is that the need not to cock up can induce, with a small c, a sort of serious dose of conservatism, which may not, in actual fact, be what they really need to do at a time when they're faced with genuine competitive pressures on all fronts.
And it's the year that digital switchover began, and I suppose many people never thought that we would never actually get to that stage, but it is now it has now started.
Well, it has now started, and I think, you know, figures just this week, this is what, the week before Christmas, as it were, from Ofcom now, I think 86% of homes have now got digital in, at least on their main set. And, you know, large numbers of people, 2.4 million of people have got, you know, have got Freeview or whatever on their second set. So, yeah, there's every reason to think that, broadly speaking, this is going to happen. I mean, for the main broadcasters and for the public service broadcasters, that's not so much the end of this is the beginning of the story, really, not the end.
Sky, it's been an interesting year for Sky. Right at the very end of the year, a change in the chief executive. Can James Murdoch go off to his new job at News International and say, job well done?
I think on balance, he can. And I don't think if it hadn't been well done, it's hard to imagine his old man sort of promoting him in quite the way that he has. As I say, I mean, ordinarily one would be talking about Sky as facing, you know, regulatory problems here and reduce their stake in ITV there and inquiry under the Enterprise Act and the pay TV marketplace and falling out with Virgin Media. You'd think, you know, but actually, you know what? They've hit all their targets on Sky Plus and the rest of their digital satellite services. From a standing start, they've got over 1 million people signed up to broadband. And, you know, unlike everyone else, they appear to face not the faintest hint of a crisis of confidence about what they're really for. You see, that's where they stand out from the public service broadcasters who, you know, the programmes are fine, actually rather good, you know, revenues aren't as bad as they have been, although who sees what happens next year. But there's just a kind of sense that, in answer to the kind of what are you for question, they're all sort of slightly unconvincing at the moment.
One of the big events in television this year, John, involved Channel 4, and it was the Celebrity Big Brother race row.
Yeah.
Led to a lot of controversy for Channel 4.
Looking back now, it seems a bit like a bad dream. I'm sure it does seem like a bad dream for Kevin Ligon and Andy Duncan. I think we're only just seeing the ramifications, apart from the financial effects of the row, in terms of what's happened to Channel 4's audience share over the last year, which is down best part of 11%.
Because Big Brother didn't perform, Celebrity or otherwise, didn't perform as well as it had done before.
I think that's right. It didn't perform as well as it has done before, but also, looking to the year ahead, they've got to somehow make up those audience figures from somewhere, and they haven't got Celebrity Big Brother on the main channel as a result, I think, of the race row from last year. And also, I think it'll be a tougher gig making Big Brother work during the summer, because the controversy which drives ratings is something they're going to have to avoid to a greater or lesser degree.
OK, well, let's move on to radio, and you're the radio correspondent of MediaGuardian.co.uk, and radio didn't escape the trust scandal, did it?
That's right. In particular, the BBC Six Music show, hosted by Liz Kershaw, in which you might remember the production staff posed as prize winners on pre-recorded shows.
Tut, tut.
And another show, Joe Wiley's show, on Radio 1, where an audience member, a member of staff, posed as an audience member. I think this is what they used to refer to as the magic of radio. But it turns out it's not magic after all.
No, well, do you think it's because all of these radio stations, they just don't actually have very many listeners who phone in?
I think there is the nightmare scenario, probably an Alan Partridge scenario, when you wait for the listeners to come in their droves. And no phone calls.
No. Well, but that hasn't stopped them all piling into digital radio, which moves us seamlessly on to the Channel 4 radio story. And Channel 4 radio, of course, won the bid you better explain what it is.
Yes, it's the very catchy. It's the second national digital commercial radio multiplex.
Very exciting.
They could be the right words in the wrong order, but I think they're correct. But we were all
agog.
We were agog.
Yes.
And we were looking forward to it launching this year.
Yes.
Sadly, it won't launch now until the beginning of 2009.
Right.
So this is a topic we can pencil in for next year's end-of-year review already. But so there will be three new stations from Channel 4.
Right.
Together with a handful, five, six, seven stations from their commercial partners.
And as you suggested, there's been a bit of a delay, but I imagine not nearly as much of a delay as if NTL had won the franchise.
That's right, yes. It is going to be within our lifetimes.
All right, jolly good. Now, just before we move on, the other thing that I want to talk about was, there's some great TV moments this year, which we've talked about already, but there was one that sticks in the mind, which, do you remember the Heather Mills rant on GMTV? And I think we have a little bit of this right now.
I've so had enough. I've had 18 months of absolute abuse. They make up such lies, you know. They've called me a whore, a gold digger, a fantasist, a liar, the most unbelievably hurtful things, and I've stayed quiet for my daughter. But my daughter, we've had death threats. I've been close to suicide. So upset about this.
Mm. I know you're...
I've had worse press than a paedophile or a murderer, and I've done nothing but charity for 20 years.
I think we'll leave that to speak for itself. Remember, whatever your thoughts, you can have your say on the Organ Grinder blog or post your comments on our Facebook wall. Resignations, sackings and scandals. It's been a year of near unprecedented movement in the editorial ranks of the UK's national newspapers. The year started with Andy Coulson stepping down from the News of the World and ended with a new man at the Times after Robert Thompson left for the Wall Street Journal. The front pages, meanwhile, have been dominated by Iraq and the long-awaited transfer of power from Tony Blair to Gordon Brown, while the tabloids have been running seamlessly endless updates on the disappearance of Madeleine McCann and the sobriety of Amy Winehouse and the state of mind of Heather Mills. A breathless 12 months then for Stephen Brooke, press correspondent for MediaGuardian.co.uk.
I don't think we've had a year this big since AD 69, which was the year of four emperors, if you remember, because five editors came and went. In reverse chronological order, let's see if we can get this right. Roger Altman, The Observer, his last issue at the end of the year. Then we had Robert Thompson at The Times, who rarely amongst editors got to choose the manner and the method and the timing of his departure. So he's got this big promotion to go and run the Wall Street Journal. Then we had Mark Thomas at The People, who was sort of dispatched almost via press release, a very terse announcement from Trinity Mirror saying that he was off, probably due to declining circulations and the desire for a change of direction for that tabloid. Then we had Patience Wheatcroft at the Sunday Telegraph departing due to these sort of issues about integration, which is facing all papers now and was going to be even more of a big issue next year. And then right at the start of the year, Andy Coulson, the News of the World, over that scandal about electronic eavesdropping and phone hacking. Some offered to resign, some were pushed. Can't imagine, though, that next year we're going to see so many departures. But, of course, all those papers are now going to have to rebuild to some extent with their new, less experienced editors.
And is any of this anything to do with the nervousness about the coming of online and the decline of print?
Yes, of course it is. I think that there's been tensions between daily papers and Sunday papers. People now have decided, I think, on their strategy, but they haven't implemented it, and they don't really know if it's going to work. So I think next year you're going to see an enormous amount of putting together of new newsrooms, and even at the Telegraph, which is further ahead than most, and trying to manage and settle in these integrated departments, integrated pods of journalists, which are going to work across newspapers and platforms. And it's going to be the really difficult task of implementing it, making it sure it runs smoothly, and actually getting journalists to produce this material in this brave new world. It's going to be tricky.
And that's the editorial side of it, but then there's the commercial side of it as well, which is even more of a nightmare for media organisations, because they don't really know how they're going to make money from any of this.
They don't, and you're seeing this process of big companies like Trinity Mirror actually going out and buying classified sites. And we know that the Guardian Media Group has this enormous chest of money that it has not yet spent, that it got from its partial sale of the Auto Trader. And we're sort of wondering now, are they on the hunt for websites? What are they going to go for? can they use their acquisitions to boost the money-making potential of their main newspaper sites, which of course have got massive readerships that dwarf the print editions, but because so many of them are overseas, national advertisers aren't really that interested in advertising on them in the same way that they are very keen to advertise in print.
Steve, so obviously it was a rather tricky year if you're a newspaper editor quaking in your editor's chair wondering if you're going to be sacked the next day.
Bloodbath, by the way, I think is the headline I'd pick. Well, yeah, but yeah, and you can see that in some of these things, that these things are cyclical. Sometimes they just, the cycles coincide. You know, so sooner or later, editors get, well, except in some cases, rather close to home. Generally speaking, editors appear to sort of, it's a bit cyclical and people go. But there's a couple of interesting things, I think, underpinning this. The Patience Wheatcroft, Robert Thompson things, although they're, you know, one arrives, one leaves, are clearly all connected with, you know, joining up the bits of, of traditional media with new media. And how that's all being handled and dealt with.
And that's been the big story of the press year, and all newspaper organisations have really this in the past year gone hell for leather down the integration route. Whichever way they choose to do it, they're all doing it one way or another.
Well, you can feel it, see it, hear it. You can sense the whole thing beginning to converge.
But the thing is, are any of them ever going to be able to make their shiny digital operations actually make any money? Certainly not as much money that washed in through the doors from print advertising.
No, but it's one of those things where you kind of, you know, you have no option but to do it. And even if you don't know how the business model is going to pan out, and even if you don't know how it's going to make money in the end, you just know that if you don't do it, and you sit in your kind of, you know, on your sort of black and white pulp. As somebody said, you know, you can't fold up a laptop and keep it under your arm.
No.
And you can't really take it to the little boy's room either. But so newspapers clearly have some enduring appeal.
Yes.
But you kind of know that you've got to do it, and you have to do it.
And
they may, you know, it's one of those things where I think of it as a kind of percentage game. You have to do all these things, and you have to hope and sit on your fingers, sit on your hands and hope that something unfolds which will pay you back.
Is it always the case? I suppose this is what the managing directors are hoping, that eventually the advertisers will follow the readers and the view and the users online.
Well, they want, in half their head, they hope that's true. In the other half, they really hope it isn't, partly because traditionally they're all newspaper people and they like it. They are all inkies, really. So they'd rather it didn't happen. On the other hand, of course, once the advertisers get dislodged from the press habit and end up on the online habit, you know, the dynamics of that marketplace are completely different. In a newspaper, you know that once somebody's bought the paper, you can count them as a sale. And you may not know very much about them, but you know how many there are, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Move to the online world, and I'm not an expert in this and really wouldn't claim to be, but it's obvious even to me that once they're in the online world, hanging on to them is going to be the devil's own job, because everyone else is able to tell them far more than you probably know about the same people who are watching, who are looking at your site.
Because the thing, of course, if, as you say, once they've bought the paper, that counts as a sale, and you can sell advertising against that. But on the internet, and the advertisers know this, you can sell advertising per click. Oh. So only if they've looked at the advert.
Well, and it's perfectly plausible, look, that I might look at The Guardian, The Times, The Telegraph and The Mirror, and possibly The Sun and who in the FT.
Depends on how you're feeling.
Well, yes. Okay, well, can they all sell advertising against me?
Yeah.
Well, if they can, the amount that I'm worth must go down.
Let's pause for a moment there, because as we were saying earlier, it's been a year in which one story can be seen to have dominated the print agenda. Here's Stephen Brook again.
Madeleine McCann seems to have been the story of the year, and one of those that just went on and on and on.
Pushing even Diana off the front page of the Daily Express.
Well, yes, and even supposedly highbrow newspapers. Even the BBC went and did a live broadcast of the 10 o'clock news there twice. I think that editors realised very quickly that people were fascinated by it, and they would sell newspapers, and it would cause massive web traffic, and people would go on and post on blogs, because everybody had initially had a very strong emotional, fearful reaction when they heard this news of this child being taken on holiday. And then throughout all the twists and turns, there was so much to report going through, and just when it thought that the story was dying down, there'd be some kind of new twist, that people would then all send their correspondence back to Pride Alouche. It also seems to be one of those 24-hour news cycle stories for the modern age where, you know, endless facts and non-facts would be announced in the same kind of breathless tones as the hard news, of which, you know, lately there has been very little, but still it's there. The stories, you know, almost daily about the latest update.
So, Steve, what did you make of the coverage of the Madeleine McCann story, which is continuing right through Christmas? Page 17 of today's Daily Express, I notice.
Well, you know, as somebody said, you know, it's a story with only one known fact, which is that this little girl disappeared. That's almost the only fact. I think the thing that marks this out, I mean, you know, and it is kind of every parent's worst nightmare, and this has been said, you know, more often than I'm sure is necessary. So the fact that there is an enduring fascination with it, I don't find surprising. The thing that's unique about the McCann case, however, on reflection, isn't that a little girl disappeared and may have come to some sort of tragic end, or that the police have cocked up, or that even at some point the parents are suspected. All these things have happened before. The thing that's unique about this is the way the media has been managed by, on behalf of, the family. And it happened for a number of particular reasons: a corporate relationship with PR people by Mark Warner, the company they were staying with, followed by help from the government, which ended up with Clarence Mitchell being there. It's been run like a political spin operation. They've sought to seize the agenda. They talk about it in these terms. They feed journalists stories in order to try and hang on to the control of the agenda, which, of course, gets to the point where if they stop doing that, you know, people are going to start assuming that they've got something to hide. They're in a really hard place now, because having started managing it this way, they kind of can't stop, when actually it's also become as much about the reputation of the parents and the Tapas Nine and whatever as it is about finding the little girl. I think we'll look back on this one as a really interesting sort of test case as to how media management in the wrong place at the wrong time on the wrong kind of issue can blow up in your face.
Well, as Stephen Brook said, John, facts and non-facts reported in the same breathless tone. This is a one-fact story, really, isn't it?
That's right. And when you can't stretch that one fact, there are other events to hang news and comment on, which is anniversaries. And, of course, in the last few days, it's Christmas without Madeleine.
There was a Christmas message, wasn't there?
Which has spawned thousands more. Words, not least, for instance, Tony Parsons in the Mirror on Christmas Eve was a particularly memorable 438 words on the topic.
Right.
Where he says, further down, talking about Christmas, he says, Jesus will survive the murderous wrath of Herod. Scrooge will find pity in his heart for Tiny Tim. And the boy will live. And Madeleine will go home to her family.
It's been a year of big and bold adverts, whether it was the Guinness £10 million tipping point, Sony Bravia's Play-Doh campaign, or that gorilla drumming to Phil Collins for Cadbury's Milk Chocolate. 2007 has had some of the most memorable ads of recent years. Budgets are on the up due to the excitement around the upcoming Beijing Olympics and US presidential elections, and it was the Fallon agency that once again ruled the roost. There were, of course, some real stinkers over the past 12 months, more on those in a moment, but as Mark Sweeney, Media Guardian's advertising correspondent, told me, there's a real buoyancy around the industry at the moment.
It seems that there are a number of advertisers who have a tradition in doing great ads, want to get back to that. Guinness put a lot of money in. It might not have been the 10 million that was quoted. It was certainly a 10 million campaign, and it was their most expensive ad. They put a lot of time and effort to trying to get back to one of these big blockbuster ads.
Can I help you, madam?
Hi, I'm looking for Christmas presents to surprise some girlfriends.
Have you thought about an iPod?
Great, I'll take four.
Celebrities around Christmas is pretty much par for the course. However, if you were to cut and splice together a number of the big ads, I think you'd probably find it quite difficult for consumers to work out who fronts what. I mean, following a massive success of, say, the Twiggy campaign for M&S, there's been a lot of Me Too ads around. For example, one of the questions we got this year over Christmas for the Media Guardian quiz is which of these four ads was Ian Wright not in? There's a certain ubiquity to a lot of the people out there, and it's probably a bit much for consumers.
Nice! That is how you sell fish.
Have advertisers been, particularly with the advent of new media and on-demand services, presumably advertisers are looking for different ways of reaching consumers, and how has that developed over this year?
Well, I think probably the best example is to once again look at Guerrilla. If you look at the style of that, it doesn't even look like a TV ad. You'd probably better describe it as a piece of content. I think it was always designed and planned that it would be something that might live on the net and go further afield. Possibly the only issue that no one ever asked was whether or not Phil Collins knew that the rights that were acquired for TV were perhaps going to run everywhere.
Yes, poor Phil Collins. Mark Sweeney there. Steve Hewlett, back to you. Do you get the sense that things were actually much better than first feared earlier this year in the advertising world?
I think it had a rather good year. And, you know, in the area that I know most about in TV, it definitely had a good year, in spite of sort of dire predictions. I mean, I think overall the market's going to be at somewhere between 1% and 2%, you know, which, you know, considering what had happened previously this in TV advertising, is pretty good. I mean, I think there's a couple of things. My impression is that big advertising feels like it's sort of coming back into fashion, that people are now, I mean, ITV have always said this and the broadcasters have always said it, but I think there's a certain truth in it, that brand building, you know, and there's been a bit of a love affair with the internet in terms of display. Search, the internet, you know, obviously the internet has gone wild, and display of a particular type, you know, is really finding its place. But I think people are sort of, in a way, coming back from multi-channel, maybe coming back a bit from the internet, I think.
Well, it's interesting to note that figures that towards the end of the year showed that digital advertising growth was starting to slow down, which was very worrying for people who are into digital advertising.
Well, it's an adjustment. I'm sure it'll continue to grow.
Yeah.
But I think that, you know, if you're going to go big and you're going to go brand building as opposed to product selling,
you've got to go to where the
then you have to go to where the mass is. And at the moment, TV still has mass and presence in a way that, you know, the internet doesn't. The only cautionary note here, of course, is that, you know, advertising is largely discretionary spend for companies, and if there is the faintest hint of a slowdown, the first thing to come out is advertising.
And there were some terrible ads this year.
It is time that fresh pasta came right up the political agenda.
Anne Widdecombe, pasta.
Fantastic.
And Alan Hansen, Morrison's.
But we're talking about it.
We are, yes. Yeah, so I suppose it did the job. Phil Collins, do you reckon that Phil Collins, John, realised that quite how big the ad was going to be?
I think he's probably slightly disappointed that it was as big, probably not if not bigger than when the single first came around. But I saw his greatest hits, which I can thoroughly recommend for a late Christmas gift and a bargain bucket near you, popped back into the top thousand. So I'm sure there's a cause for cheer in the Collins household there.
Happy Christmas, Phil. 2007 was unquestionably the year that social networking took off, not just with the kids, but also with the media professionals. It was the year that TV really went on demand, with the highly anticipated launch of the BBC iPlayer and Channel 4's 4OD service. It was also the year when the word scrubbled came into everyday lexicon. Well, at least that's what it says here. It might be in producer Ben's everyday lexicon. Yours, John?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
No, not me neither. And of course, it was the year that marked the launch of the sexiest gadget on Earth.
An iPod. A phone.
Jemima Kish, new media reporter for MediaGuardian.co.uk.
Are you getting it?
Apple are absolute masters at product launches, and the iPhone probably trumps even Apple's previous launches.
These are not three separate devices. This is one device.
And their trick is to get their fans so obsessive and excited about it, they don't actually need to do much marketing themselves.
Today, Apple is going to reinvent the phone, and we are calling it iPhone.
If you look at how many interviews and things there were beforehand, there was virtually nothing. It's not an enormous step forward in terms of individual pieces of technology on it, but it's very, very compelling, and it's much easier to use. And they've been saying for years that mobile is the next big thing, and iPhone, I think, will give that sector the kick that it needs to really get into the mainstream, especially for mobile internet.
Facebook, the website. Won't you be my friend? Don't deny me. I just want some friends on Facebook.
Sites alike, Facebook, MySpace and Bebo getting a much higher profile, and there's been a lot of coverage of them on sites like ours because they've been doing very interesting projects as they try to build their audience, and that has included trying to add media content to their sites. So Bebo has a deal with Channel 4, the BBC and lots of content companies to get great sticky content onto their websites.
Hi guys, Garrett from Tech Bytes here. This week we're going to talk about music. There are actually several websites on the internet you can use to locate music legally and free. Today we're going to talk about a freely available music source that basically creates a radio just for you on the fly without commercials. Just head over to last.fm. L-A-S-T.fm.
Yes, Last.fm, very exciting, London-based. It's kind of music recommendation site, really. Very, very clever, techie tool. And that was bought by CBS for $240 million. A lot of people were trying to work out what CBS's rationale was for buying that website. But, of course, what Last.fm is a very clever recommendation system, and so the thinking is that could be applied to any sort of content, really, including TV. So who knows what they'll do with that. It'll be very interesting to watch.
From now on, you'll never have to miss an unmissable moment. BBC iPlayer.
I think it took 4 years for the BBC to roll out the iPlayer, so it wasn't before time. There were some complaints that it's all on a Microsoft-based platform, so people on Macs and Linux couldn't use it, but they've just had a revamp of that. So now people like me who use a Mac can finally get our full license fee payers dues and access everything for 7 days after broadcast. So yeah, everything's going to go that way.
BBC iPlayer, making the unmissable unmissable.
That wasn't an ad for the BBC, by the way, and Lord knows we've had a big enough go at them for doing that throughout 2007. That was Jemima Kish. Have you got a Facebook page, Steve?
No.
And that's all we're going to get from Steve Hewlett on that. John Plunkett, you're off Facebook.
Oh, yes, yeah, I need to. It's not been updated since July the 4th, 2006, but yeah, I've got
update
a Facebook
your
page.
Facebook status. Right, that's it for our review of 2007. Did you spot the bits which were live-ish and which were pre-recorded? Sadly, the telephone lines have now closed on that competition, but you can continue to phone in and we'll continue to take your money. In my role as The Guardian's head of audio, I should say that the Pod Squad's been working tirelessly to make sure that there's been a new podcast for you to listen to every day between Christmas and New Year. You'll find our music, science and football shows, as well as our shiny new technology and environment shows, all at guardian.co.uk/podcasts. Now, if you want to have your say on anything we've discussed in the programme, head to the Organ Grinder blog or post a comment on our Facebook wall. Media Talk is produced by Ben Green. I'm Matt Wells. We'll be back next week. But in the meantime, have a happy and healthy new year. And thanks for listening. Goodbye.
Guardian Unlimited.